This is The Topic is Trek, episode 44 for Friday, May 31st, 2019. We left nothing behind. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already! Well, hello, everyone. I'm Clinton Allvord, one of your Topic is Trek co-hosts. And beaming in to join me after this long time away from all you people is one of my co-hosts, Mr. Craig Stepp.
Hello.
Hello, hello, hello. And joining us from an undisclosed Section 31 location is Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
I'm in an alternate universe.
Oh, we know how those things go.
They always turn out so well, don't they?
Do you have a goatee now?
That's right. Hey, we've been off so long. I kept thinking it was kind of like, you know, on TNG when they went off to a conference and we're on our way back to the Enterprise on the shuttle.
And then something goes horribly wrong.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. I do like the show title you've put in there. It is very appropriate for this week.
Yes, because we have so many stories. After a month. A lot of stories build up. We're going to cover as many as we can, and then we're going to give you links to a whole lot more after that.
Like speed dating.
Absolutely.
Right.
So we're going to open up subspace chatter and get things going. Now, the first thing we're going to talk about is the Deep Space Nine documentary, What We Left Behind. I got a chance to see this in the theaters a couple of weeks ago at a one-night-only screening.
And?
Yes, tell us.
Whoa, gee.
Twist at the end?
Yes.
The cliffhanger for next time.
It's returning. Oh, Deep Space Nine is returning.
Well, one of the things that they did show is drawings animated opening of what a theoretical first cold tease for season 8 of Deep Space Nine would be. And we have a link to that animation. I had seen that before because I obviously click on a lot of links to get stuff for the show. I was hoping there'd be more animation than that, but what you see in the clip that you'll watch is the sum total really of the animation that they have for this theoretical season 8 opener. But the documentary does have a section in it where they have many of the writers, including Ronald D. Moore, in to pitch what not only the first episode would be, but what the entire arc of the season 8 would be.
And when did they come up with that? Is that like for the documentary, or did they?
Yeah, it's for the documentary. They brought all the writers into a room together, and Ira was being the person in charge, kind of leading it. So he was head writer, I guess you would say, for this, in charge of the writers' room. They just had a whiteboard out and started pitching ideas, and well, this is what has happened to this character, and how about this character? And does Sisko come back? And just throwing, then they would go through and talk. Oh, well, actually they did have more illustrations after that. They weren't really so much animations, if I recall correctly, after that, right. But they did have illustrations of more of what they were talking about. So I'm kind of in error saying that was the only animation that they had, but they go through and they loosely run through probably the first episode and the first episode really rather substantially, and then ballpark out some of the other things that are going on. What they say at the end is, and normally we would kind of go off and work on stuff and come back, but there is no tomorrow this is like a one day only, we're all getting together on stuff. So you don't really get everything about what season 8 would be. And I think that's one of the drawbacks of the documentary is that we were talking and it seems like the documentary was trying to do so many different things. It was trying to do this theoretical season 8. It was trying to talk about the impact that Deep Space Nine had on episodic versus serialized science fiction. They were talking about the different actors. They were talking about feedback on Deep Space Nine and how Star Trek fans really didn't like it because it was set on a space station rather than on a spaceship, and how it took 20 years for that to circle back around for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Saying, oh, this is really innovative. So you just had so many different things going on at the same time, mm-hmm. that you would just snippet. I felt like if this is something that would have much longer sections on the DVD or the Blu-ray, I'd be happy to have that because I felt like I wanted to know more about a lot of different things that they were talking about. We do have a link to an article, and it has the biggest reveals from the Deep Space Nine documentary. Now, I don't want to talk about all of them if you haven't seen the documentary. One that apparently, though, that I was completely oblivious to, and a lot of people said, well, of course, duh, is that Garak was gay. And
yeah, I saw that recently.
They just kind of mentioned it. Well, everybody knows that, blah, 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 blah. And they're just going on to talk about stuff and going, well, clearly, you know, that flew right past me, that I didn't know that. But so there's a lot of little snippets of information that you get from it. And like I said, I don't want to go into all of them because if you haven't seen the documentary.
Well, and it's not like we had a lot of experience, you know, detecting gay Cardassians.
Yeah. That's true. It's kind of hard to have that benchmark.
Yeah.
Well, now we do.
Yeah. So should that come up in the future?
Yeah, after I did read that, I was like, you know, it kind of made sense the way he hung around Bashir all the time. You know,
yeah.
He had something for him. I don't
sharing
know.
A rectigino. I don't know. Is
it? I never had any question about it. It was just one of those, you know, matter of fact things in my head.
You believed it the whole time?
Yeah. In fact, I think that was one of Donna's first comments when she saw that character. It was like, is your gaydar going off? Like, yeah.
So. I think mine needs to be, you know, new battery put in or something. I don't know. Yeah. Something going on there. Cause,
the way you mentioned the segments didn't seem long enough to really dive into anything. I picture the clips getting cut off in mid sentence. You know, so, Alexander, tell me about Bashir's character. Well, Bashir is a rather complex click.
I wish we had time, but we don't have time to cover that entire sentence in full detail. One interesting thing was I was hoping that when I watched the footage on the big screen that all of this, you know, we remastered in HD, we went, you know, what would that look like? And I didn't think I was seeing anything. I was like, oh, you know, it still kind of looks like it was on television to my apparently untrained eye. However, there were a few shots, very few, and I noticed one in particular. I said, that's not the same. That shot, I swear that's video upscaled versus, you know, film footage. And sure enough, apparently there are just a few shots because they didn't have a finished piece that they were going with all those reels of film. It was all the reels of films from the daily shoots. So they were trying to recreate a scene by looking at the actual scene and then saying, okay, now we need the HD footage of that day's stuff and then matching up every single correct take and blah, blah, blah to make the scene work as a scene. And there were one or two places they just didn't have that footage. So there was a difference. So clearly having it originally remastered from that film made the difference. I didn't think I was going to see it, but I did see it when there was a shot that wasn't correct.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah.
And if you watch the documentary, see, you know, let me know what you think is a shot that was not from there. All right. But let's not talk anymore about that. Let's move on to some other possibly big news. Perhaps, maybe.
Possibly big news.
maybe. Quentin Tarantino made some news in December 2017 when he revealed that he had successfully pitched an idea for a Star Trek movie, or a Star Trek movie, to Paramount Pictures. But since then, it's been unclear when or if a Tarantino-directed space adventure will happen. Various Star Trek cast members expressed doubt about the project throughout 2018, as actors like Simon Pegg had no clue about Tarantino's script. However, the director has positive updates for fans and calls this Trek movie a very big possibility. Speaking with Slash Film about his new Hateful Eight miniseries on Netflix. What?
Yeah.
About that. Okay, surprise.
Spoilers.
We're learning as you're learning. Tarantino was asked about his Star Trek movie. The director responded, "It's a very big possibility. I haven't been dealing with those guys for a while because I've been busy making my movie. But we have talked about a story and a script. The script has been written." Okay, that's good news. "And when I emerge my head like Pucks of Tony Phil, post Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, we will pick up talking about it then." So while not exactly confirmation that Tarantino is definitely directing a Star Trek movie, it is a positive sign that the project remains on the director's radar. So Star Trek cast member Carl Urban said in September 2018 that he had heard a pitch of what Tarantino is planning, and Urban said, "I know a little bit about what it is, and it's bananas."
Bananas.
That's what it says.
That was not a that was a horrible Australian accent, a New Zealand accent. I mean, yeah,
it's bananas. Whoa.
It's getting worse. Let it go.
Tarantino's Star Trek script is reportedly rated R. So
Is Carl Australian or is he from New Zealand?
Yeah, he's Australian.
Okay.
That's a good point. I'm not sure. I think I thought he was
Australian. I'll look it up.
Searching. Where's that?
Hey, Google. Is Carl Urban Australian?
I should know this, but I don't. I probably knew it, and I don't know it anymore. So,
biography. Wellington, New Zealand.
There we go.
He now lives in Auckland.
John Legend telling me where he's from. By the way, the Google Home, you can change the voice to John Legend, and I had him. He's been talking to me. It's kind of jarring. Some of the he didn't record everything, so sometimes the female voice will kick in. Another thing, other times he's like, "Good morning, good morning, good morning." He's starting to sing.
Anyway. Well, maybe he just has a little clearing his throat, and he sounds different when he's clearing his throat.
Yeah,
I don't know, but what I do know is that. So I'd love to spend a lot of time talking about Quentin Tarantino and his possibly doing or not doing a Star Trek movie, but we must move on to another story. And this one kind of gives some hope and confidence that there's really a good investment in Star Trek this time around.
This time around. We have more other interesting news about this. From Variety.com, CBS is doing all it can to make sure that the Star Trek franchise lives long and prospers. The network has announced it is launching a Star Trek Global Franchise Group that will, quote, "manage and maximize the expansion of the brand beyond the traditional boundaries of linear broadcasting and streaming," unquote, with the goal of broadening the Star Trek fan community through multiple avenues such as podcasts, new digital spaces, and live experiential events. The news comes as CBS continues to push to expand the Star Trek universe. The multiple Star Trek series, in addition to Discovery, which are now in the works, include the animated Star Trek Lower Decks, a CG animated Nickelodeon series, and untitled, well, now it's titled, Captain Jean-Luc Picard Project, and a drama centered on Michelle Yeoh's Discovery character, both at All Access. Leading the units will be Veronica Hart, Executive Vice President for the newly formed Star Trek Global Franchise Management. Hart will manage the Star Trek Global brand strategy to support the content development plans, which are being shepherded by Alex Kurtzman, who is under an overall.
He's in overalls?
Overalls or his underalls? I don't know. His underoos.
His deal at CBS TV and executive produces the various Star Trek series. Well, this is good news, but where was this 50 years ago is what I want to know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why I feel like it's an investment saying, well, we want to do more stuff and we're going to try to coordinate what we're doing.
We should have somebody in charge of branding. Well, no kidding. It's like they sort of accidentally, it's sort of like that toilet paper on your shoe at this point. It's not going away. We should probably pay attention to it.
Exactly. So I view it as good news. I mean, it makes it more commercial, but it's a commercial product, and I'd much rather have it more out there than not out there. And
yeah,
hopefully get
behind
some
it,
stuff.
Stand up, support it. We're all better.
Absolutely. Now, I'd love to talk more about all of that stuff, but I'm going to move on to something that has to do with marketing Star Trek, I suppose, and that is the latest iteration of Star Trek Online. And I have a question about this. When I finish reading the article, see if you can answer my question for me.
Okay.
Star Trek Online, Rise of Discovery adds Jason Isaacs and Renka Sharma. Perfect World Entertainment announced that its next major update for Star Trek Online is coming this May, and Star Trek Discovery fans will definitely want to check it out. The free-to-play MMO will add new missions inspired by the CBS exclusive TV show Star Trek Discovery, and will feature Captain Gabriel Lorca, played by Jason Isaacs, and Commander Ellen Landry, voiced by Renka Sharma. Star Trek Online players will take flight along with the USS Buran and figure out what happened to Lorca and Landry before they made their way aboard the crew of the USS Discovery. Hmm. Rise of Discovery also includes a new reputation and ship system update that will scale all Tier 6 starships up to individual player levels. This means all captains will have access to the game's best ships. Discovery fans who were left wondering what happened to Gabriel Lorca in the past before Star Trek crew met up with him in the first season of the show will be able to explore his past in a new mission that brings Lorca and Landry together aboard the USS Buran. The pair answer a distress call from the Discovery before it sustains damage from the Klingons. Captain Lorca is the ship's sole survivor and ends up on an ice moon with Klingon search parties scattered about. So my question is hopefully simple, and somebody can say, no, this is the deal. All right. Apparently, if I understand it correctly, and perhaps I don't, real Captain Lorca was on the Buran. Mm-hmm. And real Captain Lorca, as well as the crew, disappeared. So Landry is now on the Buran. Well, wouldn't she be dead then? Lorca is the only survivor.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to figure out as you were reading that. I was like, okay, wait a minute. They're both on the Buran, yet he's the sole survivor.
So this is what I'm not quite getting. Unless
he mentioned somewhere in Discovery that he was a sole survivor too, but that was just sort of a cover up to, by the way, I'm from the alternate universe, the other universe.
Yeah, but Landry's not covering up.
Digging on him about.
I know that is a bit of a gap in the canon.
Now the only thing I can think of is, if this is worded poorly and Landry is on the Discovery already,
what if
and Lorca shows up, but then wouldn't it have to be evil Lorca and not, I don't know. I'm getting very confused.
Yes. There's a timing issue that needs to be resolved.
What if the entire ship was destroyed and the mirror Lorca took his place at that point?
Well, where did Landry come from then? Well,
right, if she's supposed to be in the Buran.
That's what I can figure out.
I was going to say, what if she was also a mirror
But she's not, because we see her in the mirror universe.
Yeah, when he gets back to the mirror universe, the evil Landry is there waiting for him in the torture chamber.
You're right.
Now I did try to play Star Trek Online.
Did you roll around a lot in this one? Do somersaults?
I could not.
What the hell are you doing?
Yeah. Well, I couldn't get to that part because I figured, well, if I got to that part,
right,
I could then figure out what was going on. But I never got to that part of the game. I'll keep playing to see if I get an answer to that question or find something online about it. If the timeline is just kind of all wonky in this press release and it makes sense when you actually play the game or what's going on.
It's now available on May 14th. So
yeah, I've been playing it for the past couple of days and again, doing my rolling around and flips and so forth. And it takes a little bit longer to play the game that way, but that's the only way I know how to play the game. So
the thing about Star Trek Online, and maybe I just need to go back to the tutorial and start over, is that I find it a little bit frustrating when, he says, oh, you got to go here, go to this, on this mission. And I end up fighting for like what feels like an hour.
Mm.
You're going in a circle and you're waiting for your energy to come back up and you shoot a few more times. And then finally you take everybody out. It just seems like it takes forever. It should be a little.
Well, my guess is that, because you can get credits in the game, and I had to figure out how you go about doing that. I didn't get to the point where I could actually do that, but by processing dilithium and turning it into the Zen credits, mm-hmm. I think this is to upgrade your ship, so you probably aren't waiting that long for things to regenerate.
Yeah, I'm sure I need upgrades and stuff. Maybe that's it, because I'm not willing to pay real money.
Right, and you can do it without paying money. It just takes a while to do it the other way.
Cryptocurrency.
Pretty much. All right. So we've talked about that. Now we're going to talk about something that just didn't happen at all. And one possible reason why it didn't happen.
Yes. Well, Chris Hemsworth has come out and spoke about why he bailed on Star Trek IV. And Chris Hemsworth has weighed in on why he opted. Well, actually, that's just what I said. I'm paraphrasing, and then I'm actually reading it. why he opted not to participate in Star Trek IV, which may or may not happen at this point. The movie has been in the works for several years now, and producer J.J. Abrams initially got fans excited by revealing the idea was to have Hemsworth come back as Kirk's dad in a fourth installment of the reboot franchise, even before 2016 Star Trek Beyond was released. For now, at least, Hemsworth is not ready to suit back up as George Kirk, and for him, it all comes down to the story. So J.J. Abrams rebooted Star Trek for a modern audiences a decade ago with his 2009 movie that introduced us to a new cast. At the beginning of the movie, Chris Hemsworth appeared briefly as George Kirk before dying heroic death in order to save thousands of lives. Thousands? Save the Enterprise or the crew.
It was supposed to be hundreds.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, that would be more like hundreds.
Millions. There were millions of people on that ship, I'm telling you.
Yeah. Somehow, some way, Abrams got, Abrams was going to bring him back via some sort of interesting sci-fi craziness. So it's bananas, I'm telling you.
That's the official term, sci-fi craziness.
Yeah. That's what my wife calls it. Now, in a recent interview, Hemsworth says he wasn't satisfied with what was being presented to him. And he says, I didn't feel like we landed on a reason to revisit that yet. And I didn't want to be underwhelmed by what I was going to bring to the table. So in a near sense, the first Star Trek movie was released. Hemsworth has become a massive global superstar, largely thanks to Thor in the MCU. Chris Pine, who plays James Kirk in the franchise, has also become a big star in his own right. A report from August 2018 noted that the Star Trek IV, which seemed to be coming together, which, yes, we were all getting excited for, was in danger of losing both of them, and it came down to money. But I don't think money was 100%. At least that's not what we're hearing from Chris.
Well, that's my question, is that, is it really all about the story? or was it that, you know, I'm putting on my bit of a cynical hat here, or they just weren't throwing the cash? Because I believe the story was that Paramount was trying to renegotiate down both Pines and Hemsworth agreed salary. And that was like, nope, sorry, we're big stars now. Can't do it.
Yeah. I don't know. It's probably a little bit of both, right? I mean, it could be. I believe it, Chris, he can obviously be picky on whether he believes the story is right or not, because he can do whatever the heck he wants at this point. So I don't have a reason to not believe this.
I can get him.
You can get him?
I can get him to sign. Just change the title of the movie.
Thor?
Yeah.
Star Trek Thor. You got it. Instead
of four. Yeah, that's right. Didn't you say Thor? I said four. You heard Thor, but I said four. Sorry.
You call it Star Trek Thor, rabbit.
I'll be honest with you. I wasn't 100% excited when, I mean, obviously I didn't know what the story was about.
Right. But
like, why don't we do something to move things forward? I don't want to see.
Yes. Pick a different storyline.
I don't want to see Kirk having to deal with his dad over again on a different. No, he did. I think he kind of had that already, but
what's he going to do? Show up as a Force ghost?
No, we're really mixing up their franchises now.
I don't know why I couldn't take a pipe, but he kind of had that.
Because remember, the topic is Trek.
He's right. Got the bell. I love it.
And what I was trying to say was Kirk already had that kind of realization back with Pike, because he's the father figure, and he kind of had to revisit that and then see his dad die there. I think I wanted a different story. I want something, push it forward, not.
Yeah, especially when I felt, my feeling was that, okay, clearly you have no story set for this return of Hemsworth, because we know what a blank show it was getting the script together for Star Trek Beyond.
I was like, a blank show? Oh, I got it.
Yeah, yeah. So you're just pulling this out of a hat, saying, we're going to have, you know, Chris Hemsworth in the next one. Yeah. Okay, sure. Why not? If, you know, to your point, if the story was good, sure, that's great. But it just seemed like we get the name first, then we figure out a story after that.
No, just to be clear, I'd have been in line to see the movie anyway, but just the same.
Maybe you are right now and you don't even know it. Who knows?
I've been sitting in a tent for 2 years.
So. Well, while Craig sits in a tent, we're going to move on to another story. And if he stays in his tent, he's going to miss the opportunity to buy these items, which are perhaps part of the tie-in with all the CBS and the global marketing and branding.
I'll just move my tent in front of Kohl's.
There you go.
Let me know how that works out.
Yeah.
From TrekCore.com, it's been about 8 months since we got our first glimpse of Hallmark's plans for their annual Star Trek ornament offerings. But this week, the company has finally revealed official images, details, and release plans for 2019's keepsake ornaments. The first set of tree hanging ornaments are arriving just ahead of San Diego Comic-Con in July, where Hallmark will have them available for purchase, along with their online and retail stores. And we'll focus on Star Trek's 23rd Century Adventures, honoring the 40th anniversary. Get that, kids. Now we're feeling old. 40th anniversary.
What?
Star Trek, the motion pictures, the refit Constitution class USS Enterprise kicks off the 2019 lineup with battery powered internal lighting.
That's actually one of my favorite Enterprises right there.
If it weren't $32.99, I would love to take one of these suckers and mod it into the burning one that goes into the Genesis planet. Take out half the saucer section, put some phaser fire on it, and we're good.
You can send your emails to Chuck Tomasi at...
Right.
I want uniqueness and handcrafted destruction.
Hey, Ben, you can get, by the way, you can get...
yeah, you can.
Who makes those, their larger scale... Enterprises that have the sounds and stuff. There was one model that had the, it was orangish, and it had, it is the one that went down on Genesis.
Sweet. Real I'm trying to remember though. I mean, I've got so many of these ornaments. I usually just get the Enterprise ones. And there already has been a motion picture Enterprise, hasn't there? I thought I have one already.
I don't think we'll be seeing that from Eagle Moss anytime soon.
Yeah, you will.
So, yeah, that's why I'm in marketing. I have great ideas.
Yeah.
All right. Other ornaments include from Star Trek Discovery. They're doing a sculpture recreating the final moments of season one's Choose Your Pain, where Commander Saru and Specialist Burnham reconcile their relationship over the late Captain Georgiou's prize telescope. And there is a little audio clip you can play, which is straight from the soundtrack, and I'm sure it sounds just that wonderful coming out of the teeny little piezo speaker that's on this thing.
Plus the fact when you play the audio, you can hear where the edits are between cuts, because the sound quality of Burnham's voice changes mid-sentence.
Also included in this year's lineup, the third tree ornament is a fuzzy throwback to the classic original series Trouble with Tribbles, a battery-powered, squeeze-activated, purring tribble to hang on your holiday decoration. I love the fact that you could have a tribble hanging from your tree. And this looks like one of the more shaggy varieties.
Somebody will think it's one of my cats.
$20 for that. Finally, revisiting the line of tabletop displays issued in 2016, a recreation of the classic Star Trek transporter room. Captain Kirk, Mr. Spock, and Dr. McCoy are ready for beam down. And they have an straight out of the audio, the video archives clip on that too. There are some special effects lighting that go on there. Large scale creation operates under electrical power from a wall socket. No batteries in this one, and includes interactive lighting with built-in audio with clips from the original series. And you can get that for a princely sum of $99.99.
Hey, by the way, the statue of Burnham and Saru.
The pose is wonderful on that.
It looks like an odd moment where it's awkward. They're trying to kiss and it's an awkward.
Well, yeah, she's kind of touching his left arm with her right hand. And
it looks more like
backwards, you know, in his fluid motion that only Doug Jones can do. Yeah. But the moment is captured more like, don't touch me.
Yeah, he's like backing up. Or, oh, I thought we were moving in together. Kind of awkward.
Why'd you give me this bag? Hey, you kicking me out? You kicking me out? Is this all my stuff?
Saru's backed up like, maybe I read this wrong.
I thought this was your vacuum cleaner.
Oh, dear me, dear me, dear me.
Where are we going now?
Where are we going? Any place other than here right now. I came across an article that is from the current issue, or a current article on Smithsonian of all places. And it's about the women who coined the term Mary Sue. And I know some of you out there know the deal here. Some people are going, all right, why are we talking about Mary Sue? Because on this show, the topic is Trek.
Oh, it has Trek origins. I thought we talked about this once upon a time.
Well, we may have touched on that. You know, I say that there are two things that are perhaps the deep, dark secrets or hidden shame or out in the open shame, however you want to look at it, about Star Trek, that we unleashed many things on fandom. Two of them are slash fiction and the term Mary Sue. So if you want to learn more about the origins of it and its origin in Star Trek fanzines and the two women responsible for coining the phrase, then I invite you to check out the article. And I haven't mentioned yet, but links to all the articles that we are talking about on the show tonight can be found in the show notes for episode 44 over at thetopicistrek.com. And you can find out more than you ever wanted to know about Mary Sue. An interesting part of the story is that they also had a term for male characters, because they were getting a lot of the same type of stories involving male characters.
Yeah.
But of course, all the male writers said, oh no, our character can be like that because it's a guy. It's okay. So I think that was one of them was Marty Sue, and I forget what the
Marie
other one was.
Sue, yeah.
And it's like those didn't seem to catch. So I think now even if you're a guy character, it would be a Mary Sue character, which I thought is kind of interesting in and of itself.
Mary Jo.
That's right. Isn't that's more like Petticoat Junction or something, I think. I'm not sure.
Betty Jo. That's Betty Jo.
Oh, sorry. There's Uncle Joe. I don't know what's going on there.
I mean, I'm showing my age because I knew that.
Let's move on to the world of fine art.
Yes. And over at space.com, they have stunning Star Trek comic art, and it sells for nearly $14,000 in a recent auction.
Yo, what?
Yeah. A gorgeous Star Trek cover art piece featuring the original series cast sold for $13,750 at a recent auction. A longtime collector of pop culture from New York State ponied up the phones for the Greg Heidelbrand art, which graced the debut issue of Star Trek Year 5, number 1. I think that's a recent comic.
It is. As a matter of fact, when Bonnie was out for Free Comic Book Day, she bought me issue number 1, so I have that.
I need to check that out. Was it good?
I have not had a chance to read it yet.
Okay.
So it's sitting right there. And I know that illustration by Hildebrand. I've got that right here.
Yeah.
Nice.
So the piece features an image of Captain James T. Kirk, besides representations of the ship, the USS Enterprise, and various planets. Below him are large images of Spock and Dr. McCoy, and then several other small pieces of the rest of the... And the rest.
Yeah, it's Gilligan's Island. It's a Skipper and Marianne in there at the same time.
Yeah. But that is pretty cool. I like that. I meant to go check out that comic. So that's a nice reminder. I'm going to bookmark that.
You should bookmark that. And if you forget, you just have to look at the show notes for episode 44 over at thetopicistrek.com. I got this bell. I'm going to use it. Oh,
sure. Right. It's easy to get the timing when you do it yourself.
That's right. All right. Speaking about timing, we've got something that's come up again in timing. And is the timing right this time around? What do you say, Chuck?
Oh, the on again, off again soap opera that is Viacom and CBS and Paramount and all that love. We've got more from TrekMovie.com. It's the on-again, off-again plan to reunite CBS and Viacom, which is the parent company of Paramount Pictures. It appears to be back in motion with new reports that CBS is planning to acquire Viacom, which would once again bring Star Trek under a single corporate owner. Let me tell you why. Earlier this year, we reported that the hunt for a permanent replacement for Les Moonves as CEO of CBS was being linked as a precursor to the possibility of CBS and Viacom re-merging. That hunt for a new CEO has been put on hold as CBS announces this week that they have extended Joseph Ianniello. Is that how you say his name? I've never got that quite right.
Yeah, we still don't
last names.
Yeah, we still don't have this one down, and he might be the permanent president, so we really should work on it.
Big J.I., as we'll call him.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to extend his role as the acting CEO until the end of the year, which increases industry buzz that the merger was now taking precedent. As noted by Bloomberg, the extending of J.I.'s role sends a strong signal that CBS is prepared to merge with Viacom. Following the announcement, Variety, NBC, and Fox Business are reporting that the CBS board has initiated new internal discussions with an eye towards making an offer to acquire Viacom. In 2018, the companies actually got further along in the process, but it ended without a deal and a bitter court fight that concluded last September. We all remember how that played out.
Yeah, not too well for Les.
However, the main opponent to the remerger was former CEO Leslie Moonves. Oh, they're using his full name now. Along with some of his allies on the board who have since been replaced by Sherry Redstone, who owns a controlling stake in both corporations as a main proponent of the merger, of course. In recent months, calls for the remerger have increased. one of the factors seen as a benefit is to better position CBS for the streaming wars.
Streaming wars!
Yeah, that has nothing
to
do.
Don't cross the stream!
It's a cross between Ghostbusters and Star Wars, I guess. Yeah. As noted by the market analyst Scott Perry at Seeking Alpha, quote, with Disney, Warner Media, and NBC Universal all planning on rolling out streaming services in the near future, the time is now for CBS to greatly enhance its streaming service by combining with Viacom, unquote. A Bloomberg opinion piece adds, CBS has been building an audience with CBS All Access, as we're all well aware, and Showtime apps, and Viacom recently bought the free Pluto TV platform. But most importantly, together, they'd have more scale, which not only helps them get by in the land of giants, well, Disney, AT&T, Apple, Amazon, it also makes them a more palatable takeover candidate. I'm curious about that last sentence, but I think it makes sense. Yeah, obviously, if you're going to play with the big boys, you're going to have the content that goes with it, and a merger would certainly bolster that.
Right, and it's interesting that over the course of time since it was announced that Discovery was going to be exclusively on all access on CBS app, that, you know, oh, how could you possibly do that? And guess what? That was the way the industry is trending. You know, now you're going to have things on the Apple service that are just on the Apple service. You're going to have stuff on the Disney that is just going to be on Disney Plus and no place else. And so everybody's coming in these fiefdoms, and CBS has to be in that game. Mm-hmm. So lead with something that people want.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. Well, you know, CBS and a lot of other people made one of the Apple CD-ROM moves. You know, Apple was the first one to really say, hey, we're ditching CD-ROMs and kind of get away from that. And next thing you know, that was the future.
That's right.
For the most part.
But I got a new phone in it, and I got one that has
a CD-ROM?
a headphone jack, and it's a new phone. So
yes, absolutely.
There you go.
You're hip.
I am.
I'm and a DB25 serial port.
Yeah, well, that's really hard to work with because it makes the phone really thick. All right, let's... Thick.
I got a phone with dial-up modem.
Oh yeah. Well. I can't top that. I have no idea. All right. Well, let's move on and make me feel better. Let's talk about somebody else's mistake.
Yeah, that's always makes me feel better.
And this story comes to us from Popular Mechanics. Where am I going with the story, you wonder? Well, the story says, look what Star Trek fans accidentally did to this M41 Walker Bulldog tank.
Okay.
A Star Trek fan club that was simply trying to do a good deed for the community accidentally painted an army tank the wrong color. The M41 Walker Bulldog light tank on display in West Virginia is now bright yellow thanks to a coloring mistake.
Great camouflage, boys.
The club, city, and National Guard are all planning to fix the tank and restore it to its proper color. The M41 tank is owned by the National Guard and parked at the entrance to Bluefield, West Virginia's Latito Park. Earlier this week, a photographer from the Bluefield Daily Telegraph, the news leader in Bluefield, snapped a photo of the tank with a new paint job, which the paper described as lemon-lime green. City officials said that they had no plans to paint the tank and they were unaware of the changes. The odd thing about the paint job was that whoever had done it had obviously done so with great care, painting within the lines. The only real problem was the choice of color, which was atrocious. As a result, city officials were reluctant to call the paint job vandalism. I see. It's really horrible, but it was done really well. After publication of the story, an explanation quickly surfaced. The local college Star Trek club, the USS Jaeger chapter of Starfleet International, and we hope to have a representative of them on the show soon. Not about this story, you understand. Had taken care of the tank for nearly 20 years and recently concluded it needed a new paint job. So the club acquired some paint from a local shop in Tank Green. Upon opening the cans, however, the club was concerned that the paint appeared to differ substantially from the traditional olive drab, an olive green slash brown slash gray blend favored by the USS military at the time of the M41 was in service. Bowing to expertise, the club sponsor said, "Surely it will dry to the right color." Spoiler, it did not. So there's a picture of the tank. And again, if you go over to the show notes for episode 44 at thetopicistrek.com, you'll see the horrible, you're saying, what's wrong with the color adjustment on this photo?
Yeah,
it is like the yellow submarine came to life as a tank.
Hey, the picture above it is in black and white. We didn't have any real reference to go.
Well, gray would have been fine. I think that would have settled for gray.
Yeah, that is hilarious.
I was waiting for you to get to the end because it said the opening sentence was really tricky when it said they tried to do a good deed by accidentally painting an army tank the wrong color. Like, okay, how's this going to play? Yeah.
How exactly do you do that? Well, we thought it would change color. You know,
they should put a big flower in the barrel. And
did such a great job. They were reluctant to call it vandalism.
It's ugly, but it's well done. Yes.
Well played, Star Trek fan club. Well played.
Yeah, they should. That's like a big flower belongs in the barrel.
That's right. All right, something that should be appear in Help or something when the Beatles are playing out of that field. Okay,
yeah.
Let's move on from something that was made to look nice to something that looks horrible right now, but hopefully will be made to look nice.
One man's trash is another man's treasure. Okay, wait, I guess you need to read the article first. So, yeah. Starship Enterprise replica seeks new life. New civilization with new Toronto owner. The Starship Enterprise has traveled far and wide throughout the galaxy, encountering countless civilizations, and now it is sitting in a garage in eastern Toronto.
What?
We need to make a film out of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Star Trek 200, the escape from the garage. So its new owner has plans are perfectly fitting for a Star Trek fan, tapping into an ethos that touched the heart of millions of Trekkies since the franchise debuted on television in 1966. Bill Dorn, a 51-year-old who runs a boutique public relations and marketing firm in Toronto, watched reruns of the original Star Trek series as a boy. His favorite character is Spock. His favorite captain is Picard. And his wife's... What? Oh, his wife was impregnated by Kirk?
No.
His wife...
Stay on track.
His wife read, Craig, read.
Pregnant with their first child when he... and he hoped to name the boy Mr. Sulu. Oh, no. But they ended up naming him Elijah.
Yeah, I gotta feel there was a little bit of overriding that opinion, you know.
Did you imagine going to kindergarten?
I'm Mr.
Sulu. Having the teacher call Mr. Sulu.
Oh my!
So when they call him by, you know, his surname, Mr. Sulu. So Mr. Dorn is, in other words, is about as much of a Trekkie as a Trekkie can be. The Saturday before Mother's Day, he was driving home and he was going to do some grocery shopping when he saw a scale replica of the Enterprise NCC 1701A, not bloody B or C, A. So the last scene, and it was last seen in the movie Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, released in 1991 on a neighbor's front lawn. Okay. That's a weird sentence.
Yeah, the movie was not released on this neighbor's front lawn. Let me be clear about that.
Yeah.
How the elephant got in my pajamas.
The Enterprise was on his front lawn.
Yeah.
Mr. Dern, I still want to say Michael Dorn.
Yeah, go ahead. Why not?
Michael Dorn.
He's going to name the kid Mr. Sulu. Why not? Go for it.
His name might be Michael. They never said, I don't think. Anyway, Mr. Dorn stopped to get a picture, which is about as big as a small car. As he was snapping the pic, the homeowner came out with a for sale sign.
Ominous.
Yeah, it was just pure serendipity because I'm a huge Star Trek fan, as we've heard earlier in evidence in this name means kid. Anyway, Mr. Dorn says, you've got the perfect nerd driving past the perfect nerd toy.
Nerd!
It turns out the seller was a subcontractor who was working on last year on renovations on the Silver City Richmond Hill Cinema, where the replica was installed. Rather than chuck it in the garbage, he brought it home.
Of course he did.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say something because it had Chuck in there. And with the ship taking up too much space and not being a Star Trek fan, the man decided to sell it. So after quickly checking with his wife, she likes watching.
Remembering the whole Mr. Sulu incident. Yeah.
They never did really say what his name was because his wife left him.
Yeah, right. So she likes watching Star Trek with me, but this is next level nerd. Mr. Dorn said. Mr. Dorn bought it for $600, a steal since it was the asking price was $1,200. It's now sitting in his garage.
And how long will it be in his garage before he sells it for $400?
Well, I could not find a
up for sale.
Yeah, I could not find a link for it anyplace. Although it does exist, he is doing a fundraiser. He wants to have it fixed up and take it around to various conventions and so forth. The problem being that, and again, I wish I could have found the fundraiser page, is he's talking about a lot of money to do this. And a lot of people going, you know, it's not really that good of a model that you want to be spending like $250,000 or whatever sum of money is.
Wow. It's not like the original prop. It's a replica.
Right. What I thought was also interesting is that the day that this happened, there was a post on it on Facebook. And sure enough, nerds out there, somebody nailed right away. Oh, that's probably the one that used to be hanging in the cinema at such and such. Yes. Yes, it was.
Oh.
Okay. I'd buy it for $600 just to blow it up with a high-speed camera.
You really just want to destroy these enterprises, don't you?
You can make more money off the YouTube video.
Wait a minute. This isn't the Genesis ship. This is the one that came after the Genesis Enterprise, Chuck.
I'll make a movie around the explosion.
Yeah. This ship is the reason. The reason it came into being because of the first one. So
that's right.
Exactly. So it had to go somehow.
Wow.
We'll write the backstory.
By the way, Clinton, your little notes here, read entire thing if possible, relatively short.
Well,
if possible.
I was trying my best to get through it. And I was like, you know, this is a little longer than I think he realized.
Well, it just felt like if you stopped in the middle, it's like, and what happens? Does he buy it? How did he come across this thing? So, let's get to the whole thing and be done with it. And if I can find a link to that GoFundMe or whatever the page is, I will put a link to it in the show notes. I did a search and I came across a lot. There are a lot of fundraisers out there that have Star Trek in them on Indiegogo and all these places, but I couldn't find the one I was looking for. Still haven't found what I'm looking for. All right.
Looking for Dorn.
Yes. It's Bill. Bill Dorn. And the child's name is not Mr. Sulu. Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to... We have lots of stories like this that come up. I thought this one was a really interesting take, though, on this. The future of Star Trek seems to be coming to life.
Yeah. Please let me do this as an infomercial.
You certainly can.
Okay. Have you been treating yourself lately? Have you any cuts or abrasions? Have you had to kiss any skinned knees, gotten a scratch from a temperamental cat? If you've had to reach for a bandage since the year began, don't worry, you're not alone. In fact, in 2018, the U.S. spent close to $774 million. That's $774 million on self-sticking bandages. Colloquially, you might refer to them as band-aids of various kinds. And we need them. Open wounds must be covered up so they can heal properly. You don't want anything infecting your dermis. That's your skin. While it grows new layers and replaces what's lost to injury, that takes precious time. Obviously, a paper cut heals faster than a nasty slip of the knife slicing veggies for dinner. And even that heals faster than a large wound sustained from a high-impact accident.
I got hit by this Star Trek Enterprise that was in some guy's lawn.
The larger the wound or Star Trek model, the longer it takes to heal. If your skin is too damaged to heal by itself, or with the aid of stitches, doctors might try taking a graft of healthy skin from another part of your body to replace the injured spot. But it's a painful process, leaving you with just that much more dermis to regrow. Taking healthy skin from somebody else is not an option.
Ew.
Your immune system is a zealous, fickle thing. And the defender that it is, it might mistakenly treat the new graft as hostile and make you terribly sick as it tries to fight off the invader.
Intruder alert. I'm just doing what I can here to punch it up.
Of course, in Star Trek's 24th century, any ship sickbay, home medicine cabinet, or halfway decent field medical kit includes a trusty dermal regenerator. It's the ultimate point-and-click solution. Just aim it as your wound and turn it on. It sounds so simple. And its gentle beam of healing magically closes up the skin. How does it do that, you might ask? Wait, there's more. The name is a dead giveaway. It's a dermal regenerator. It seems
to... I get it.
By prompting new skin cells to grow in the beam's wake, it's the perfect solution. Well, you won't find the 24th century answer in Band-Aids in a drugstore near you anytime soon. We can at least see it on our long-range sensors. Researchers at the Wake Forest Institute of Regenerative Medicine, led by Assistant Professor Sean Murphy, developed something they call a mobile skin bioprinter.
Printer.
In June 2018, the paper was just published in Nature's Journal because, well, it came out in February 2019. So a little bit of latency on that. Sorry. Let's say you've got a big bad scrape that needs healing and you call the Wake Forest team into action. Da-da-da-da. First, they take a small sample of healthy skin from you and put it in a jar where it can grow independently of your body. Once lab techs have a nice supply of healthy, happy skin cells, they move them into a life-sustaining hydrogel that's scientifically patented with secret formula X24K155.
And isn't that how the Powerpuff Girls were?
No, that was Secret Chemical X.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Don't test me in the middle of this. Come on. Where was I? Oh, they pour it into their bioprinter, which looks like a couple of microwaves combined with a 3D printer arm and a disembodied robot head, all bolted to a rack of wheels. Never mind that. They roll it over your bedside, and where the robot head scans your scrape, getting a laser eye view of the contours and ridges, and then the machine proceeds to figure out exactly where and how to place the new layer of skin cells so they'll match the structure of the skin that's originally there. Once the scanning's done, the bioprinter's printing arm gets to work putting down cells where it's given, layer by layer. Wow, that was fun. I really want to buy one now.
So the thing that gets me about that is that, okay, you've got this huge gash, and they're going to take some skin and
then new skin cells make a soup out of it.
You know, it's like, how long is this taking, Doc?
I've got a fire burn here that needs attention.
Well, they put it in a jar where it can grow independent of your body, and then once they have the healthy supply of the skin cells, then they mix it. It's like I'm healed. I'm done. It's been 6 months. I'm good.
It probably doesn't take that long because they can do skin cells, not necessarily skin cells, but grow cells on a matrix fairly quickly. I mean, skin cells grow pretty rapidly. I'm not a doctor and I don't play one on TV, but this certainly takes out the rejection part of the equation. If it takes out the need for a graft, which they mentioned, you're going to have to not only... Right. grow the area on the graft, which is often done with internal balloons to expand the skin you've got, or, oh, by the way, you're going to have to grow that part back too. So I, if you had sustained, say, severe burns over part of your body, and they said, okay, we're going to take this and it's going to take a week. Whether or not, even if it took a week or a month, you're still going to be, without it, you would be in pain and agony either way. So if they said, hey, by the way, in a month, we're going to spray paint you a new coat.
Earl Shive is going to come in and
clear coat.
As long as it's not
Do you want the clear coat? Don't go for the clear coat. Don't go for the clear coat.
And don't ask those Star Trek volunteers to help.
My skin is yellow and it's green and it's purple. I don't understand.
But I like the direction it's going. And obviously I read further in the article, you know, this is the first generation. It's not the, you know, the hand wavy purple beam thing, but we'll see these get smaller and faster in the future.
Are you saying we want to wait for the next generation?
Oh, never get a version one of a product, right?
And it's a very disturbing video until you, that the accompanies this article until you realize that's a fake arm. Cause there's
I was like, what? And am I looking at?
There's a severed arm, and the lab tech is just kind of like carrying it over to the machine and doing something. I say that person is not going to heal. I'm telling you right now,
he's dead, Jim.
He's going to grow another body off that arm.
Oh,
all
very,
right.
Very creepy.
Are we done yet, or is there more?
We are practically done, but I'm going to cover one story.
Okay.
From Vulcan, Alberta, Canada.
We need a sound effect just every time we do that.
We do. And this is the...
For that in the next episode, I'll have something for you.
All right.
A transporter or something.
Yeah.
With Canadian bacon or something in it.
What?
I don't know.
I was taking a drink at that point. I'm going to put it on the computer. Thanks.
So this is a story about the Star Trek tournament weekend in Vulcan. It doesn't say why it's called the Vulcan. A few days in Vulcan starting Thursday, May 2nd, as they kick off their annual Star Trek tournament weekend. And it will include a baseball tournament, a rugby tournament, and a slow pitch tournament. Or did, because you've missed it. It's already gone by at this point. So wait for next year's Star Trek tournament days in Vulcan, Alberta, Canada.
I don't think there's anything really Star Trek related other than the name Vulcan, Alberta, Canada. They're really just milking it.
Yeah. Well, what about this story that has to do with Vulcan, Alberta, Canada? Talk about milking it. Ethan Peck, Star Trek's new Spock, looks forward to visiting Vulcan, Alberta. It's true. Ethan Peck plays Spock on Star Trek Discovery, but has never been to Vulcan, Alberta. I haven't been to it. I've heard about it, Peck told Global News Friday at the Calgary Comic and Entertainment Expo. I feel like maybe Anson Mount has been there. The southern Alberta town of 1,900 is famous for embracing its Star Trek connection, really, sharing the name of the fictitious planet on which Spock was born. Vulcan, Alberta has become a tourist attraction for fans, boasting a replica of the USS Enterprise and a bronze bust of Leonard Nimoy, who originally played Spock in Star Trek on both the big and small screens. After just one season on the new CBS Star Trek series, though, Peck isn't expecting a bust of his portrait of a young Spock to appear in the town of Vulcan. No, I'm not expecting a bronze bust, Peck said. I think that's reserved for the originator. And I think he's right on that one. Mm-hmm. But that's the news from in and around Vulcan, Alberta, Canada. Okay, we covered a lot of stories. And I know you're thinking, clearly, that's got to be all the stories that have to do with Star Trek since you guys have been away. That can't possibly be anything else. Well, you are wrong, Tricorder Breath, because we have links to an additional... Not 10, not 20, not 30.
Wait, there's 40, more.
47 additional stories that we did not get a chance to talk about. But
all right, here's the next one.
No, stop, stop, stop.
You need artificial intelligence to process this show now.
Yeah, well, certainly I don't have any intelligence, so I need the artificial intelligence as well.
The computer comes back. I boiled it down to one story.
Star Trek, Alberta, Canada.
Yeah, Ethan Peck.
And remember, if you want to read all these stories, the ones we talked about, and read them in depth, or the 47 other stories, go to the show notes for episode 44 over at thetopicistrek.com, and you can hear about it. But now it's time to come back from subspace chatter and get on to our main mission, which is sort of a missionette, because we're going to be doing some ruminating about something that happened. Since we were I'll tell you how long it's been since we were last on. Some news broke about a particular show, and we had been talking about the new series coming to CBS All Access. And
I think we even named it.
We kept coming up with different names, the Picard show, what's it going to be? And they said, no, it's a very, when you hear the name, it's going to, you know, surprise you. Well, it surprised everybody, because as I'm sure you know by now, the name of the show is Star Trek Picard.
Hey, well, my vote was Late Night with Jean-Luc.
Late Night.
So the title of the show was first revealed at the upfronts, and that is the big event that happens in New York City, where all the networks are talking about their upcoming shows, and it's a chance for the various affiliates as well as buyers for commercials to see what product is coming to every network. And so they also mentioned Star Trek Picard. They had it in a string of trailers that was coming out, but the trailer is really in quotes. The trailer for Star Trek Picard in the CBS upfronts was a 9-second clip, half of which was just text.
Yep.
And then we have a person at Starfleet in a uniform that doesn't look exactly familiar, yet it looks familiar, asking, oh, what is your name, sir? And then we cut to Jean-Luc Picard, kind of giving this look like, don't you know who I am?
I really wanted a palm plant. I really wanted to.
Oh, that would have been.
That would have been classic.
They also announced that in addition to the show being on CBS All Access in the United States and space in Canada, this time around, rather than Netflix, it will be distributed internationally on Amazon Prime.
Oh, interesting.
So we've got a lot of players involved with this. You know, obviously CBS still needs assistance getting this thing distributed outside of the United States. And I don't know whether that will change in the future as well as they try to grow that network. All right. After that happened, we got some images from a live shoot that was being done for Star Trek Picard. They actually did some filming at the Anaheim Convention Center. And talk about being low profile. Not only was this footage being shot, it was supposed to obviously represent Starfleet Academy or Starfleet headquarters, because you had people walking around in this new uniform, but you also had aliens. All right. This took place directly across the street from Disneyland while there were conventions going on at the convention center. So they weren't really being very secretive about what they were shooting and where they were shooting it.
Right.
I don't know whether
that was play, dude.
Yeah, exactly. You almost look like Picard. Cool.
Yeah. Only seriously older.
Good cosplay, man. Now, after that happened, we had lots of images of the uniform. So a graphic artist came up with an illustration of the uniform. And because of all the footage that was of all the photos that were taken at that shooting, they were able to come up with the different color schemes for the uniforms, what the insignias look like for the uniform.
That is serious, serious documentation and detail based off a few pictures.
It doesn't look that different from TNG.
It's very in line with the styling. Everybody should be comfortable with that one. It's not like a radical departure like we saw in Discovery.
Although it's interesting to note that, judging by what people were seeing, that you have what's called the bifurcated delta. Yeah. Which is the Star Trek Discovery Delta Shield with the slice about 2/3 of the way across.
Mm-hmm.
It's represented in different ways on these badges. One of them, it's an element behind an outline of a Delta Shield, and another one, it's actually within the Delta Shield. Yeah. The pips have been moved from the collar where they were in Star Trek The Next Generation and in that era to right at the edge of the color line where it goes from color to black on the uniform on the front.
Another notch.
Yeah.
Looks like it's got a phone notch.
Oh, yes, I see. Yeah. right. So the front of the uniform has a zipper down for the, so the collar can open, and there is like a black turtleneck, which is, you know, almost even a throwback all the way to the original series. So it's kind of in line with a lot of different things. Some people said it's also in line with the way the uniforms looked in the 2009 Countdown to Star Trek comic that came out before the first movie. It looks like the uniforms in Star Trek Online. So a lot of different things being mixed in there. Then after that, this is how long we've been off. After that, then a week or so ago, we got the official first actual teaser trailer for Star Trek Picard.
This is intriguing. I watched it a couple of times because there were a lot of hidden elements in there.
Right. So we have lots of shots of the vineyard, and we're supposed to believe that this is obviously the Picard vineyard in France.
Yeah. Well, it's where, Chateau Picard and all the points of wine.
Right. And Picard has gone back there several times. A lot of it seems to be the place he goes to when he's been rattled. He went there after the Borg incident.
Yeah.
He was there in All Good Things. You find him there. And so to see him there again is really not a surprise.
And the narrative indicates something has rattled him. Like they said 15 years ago, you did X, Y, Z, and hey, where did you go? So I get the feeling we're going to see some backstory to fill in that narrative. We're going to see flashbacks or, you know, unlike Discovery, which led with the first two episodes being the backstory.
Right.
I'm curious to see if they'll do that sort of approach to give us the intro, which I didn't really prefer, to be honest, or stretch the story out with flashbacks through one or more episodes in the beginning.
I want some flashbacks with James McAvoy.
Yes. Well, now he doesn't have a job anymore, so.
Yeah, he's out. Yeah, he's available.
The narration indicates that by inference that Picard left the rescue mission to save Romulans before the home planet was destroyed. Then something happened after that.
Yep.
So I'm thinking, okay, so it wasn't the destruction of Romulus that was a problem. Something else rattled him and caused him to leave Starfleet. And something he obviously has to now revisit for one reason or another. So I'm intrigued. We still do not have a date for this to come out. Last I heard, we're still talking about the end of this year for it, but no official timeline has been given. They're still filming. I know they finished the first block because I think we talked about an article where each director is doing two episodes rather than one. And Culpepper has finished with hers, and possibly by this point, Frakes is done with his as well, because he was taking the second block of two episodes.
Mm-hmm. You know, he's got to be in the episode somewhere.
Well, I mean, we also, if people are in it from Next Generation, they're playing, you know, really close to the vest on it, saying, no, we haven't been approached. We know nothing about this. Because people keep asking them, and they say, nope, no idea. I don't know. I have to believe them. But Well, I mean, you want to take them at their word. I'd be disappointed if we don't see anybody, though, that it's there'll be such a disconnect. I mean, yeah, they've all moved on with their life and doing different things, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, especially if he's coming back somehow to Starfleet to do something because he's clearly at Starfleet headquarters, there's got to be some reference to anybody else that has to do with, you know, his time on the Enterprise.
Yeah. Oh, well, our predictions have gone with.
They have. You know, we should have just gone with Star Trek Picard. And like, no, it couldn't possibly be that. How can that be surprising? That's nothing. Well, you know, I feel like, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. And I feel like this is a shame on me for not going, nope, it's the name is Star Trek Picard.
Yeah. It's a little obvious.
I was thinking more along the lines of what we were predicting with Discovery for season one and season two. We're so far away off.
Yeah.
Hey, we tried at least.
That's right.
Yeah, it's like, what do you make of this trailer? Not even close.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're taking a guess. And we're pretty clear about the fact we're just taking a guess. We have no inside information at all.
We'll work on that.
All right. If you have any thoughts about the teaser trailer for Picard, or thoughts about the uniforms for Picard, or thoughts about the fact that you had CBS All Access filming directly across the street from the competition who now does Disney Plus by shooting opposite Disneyland, let us know what you think about any of that stuff. You can leave a message over on our Facebook page at The Topic is Trek on Facebook. All right, it's time to do our Warp Speed Roundtable, and this one is a bit of a poser. Now, last time around, we asked the question, which character from Star Trek Discovery have you enjoyed watching? But this time around, we're going to go to a completely different subject, and that stems from an article that I read entitled, Star Wars Day, Where the Hell is Our Star Trek Day?
Yeah.
And the premise of the article is that Star Wars has May the 4th, but Star Trek doesn't really have a day. Now, I personally have some problems with Star Wars Day being May the 4th. I'm thinking, okay, you took a pun and that's the date you landed on? Is that what you're going to...
real thing.
So, okay. But now we do have a couple of days out there as possibilities. The article talks about April 5th, which is First Contact Day, which is supposed to be the day that Zefram Cochrane...
That was my initial go-to as well.
Yeah. The second day we have out there is September 8th, which is the day that the original series premiered on NBC.
Logical.
However, those of you in the know that actually Star Trek premiered 2 days earlier in Canada on September 6th. So which of those two dates would it be? And
were they on the Gregorian calendar at that point?
The Trudeau calendar, I believe, at that point. I'm not sure. I have no idea what they were on. The Queen's calendar. Who knows? All right. I know that we've got some other suggestions. So we're going to go around and say, well, what would you like to have as Star Trek Day? Given your choice,
if you Google Star Trek Day, it will come up with September 8th in the right-hand margin where it has a sort of info box.
And that would be, I'm going to go first and say that would be my choice because really everything stems from that day. Now, you do have to account for, well, is it the 6th or the 8th? But I'm going to go with the 8th.
And there's no dates in the calendar that rhyme with live long and prosper.
Yeah, or Star Trek or, beam me up. Or
yeah.
Yeah. So go past that. Of course, I'll throw another one out there, even though it's the one that I'm not advocating for it, but that would be the 17th of January.
And what is the significance of that?
That's 1701.
Oh, yeah, I like it.
But I'm going to go with September 8th. Go next.
I've also thrown out there March 22nd, which is James T. Kirk's birthday.
Okay.
It's not for a while yet, 2233, let's, you know. The other one that I thought might be clever is March 26th, which is Leonard Nimoy's birthday. And also happens to be my birthday, but we'll
I see. I see ulterior motives here.
Absolutely. I want to celebrate Star Trek Day in style.
Well, where's the Shatlov? You got Nimoy,
I don't have any other celebrities on my birthday.
You would then have to have it. Well, it's not a day. It's the period of Shatmoy, which is the period between
two birthdays. Is that like President's Day? We don't have Lincoln's birthday and Washington's birthday anymore?
Right. But this would be like a week-long celebration.
Ooh. Who wants just a day? You're right. We should have
Star Trek week.
Yes. And we could put a convention on those days.
Yeah. All right, so which of those days are you going with, Chuck?
I still lean towards April 5th.
Okay, which is First Contact Day.
If Congress were to declare September 8th, I will gladly back that up as well.
All right, and what about you, Craig?
I'm kind of torn. I'm down with September 8th for sure, and I also like First Contact Day because that's kind of taken from the context of the story, you know, how things progress, you know, where things started,
mm-hmm.
Rather than literally where it started in September 8th. So I'm kind of I probably lean towards April 5th a little bit.
Yep.
Okay. But that's the three of us. So if we were the rulers of everything, it would be April 5th. But we are not the rulers of everything. And you may have an opinion about what day you would like to be Star Trek Day. Maybe you've said, hey, you forget this date, which kind of sounds like that phrase from that episode. And let us know if that's the case.
Jim.
It's life, Jim, but not as we know it day. So you can either voice your preference for one of these choices or some other one. And again, you can leave a note over at the topic is Trek on Facebook. So just go to facebook.com/thetopicistrek and you can let us know what you think. I'll put a post up that asks this question so you can give you a reply there. That said, we've covered a lot of Star Trek news, and hopefully it won't be another month before we record another episode. But travel and vacations have just, you know, fortunately the hiatus came right after Discovery was done, so we got a chance to discuss all of Discovery, and then we had this short hiatus or long hiatus. And with luck, we'll be back on a more of a regular schedule next time around. But
I feel like he's talking to you, Chuck.
Yeah. No. just letting the audience know. It's like, well, why were you not around? And is this a normal thing? So, no. We hopefully will be back in a couple of weeks. But it's about time to refill the dilithium chamber and get on out of here. You can find me, Clinton, over at Comedy Forecast, all one word, with the number 4.com. Or you can follow me on Twitter at Comedy Forecast or Instagram Comedy Forecast, or you can follow the Comedy Forecast page on Facebook or MeWe or pretty much any place you can find something that has to do with Comedy Forecast. And how about you guys?
Go ahead, Greg.
Oh, that would be me. So you can find us over at the Technorama podcast. If you search for Technorama podcast in Google, you'll find us in all the places. Search for us in Facebook or Twitter or just on Google. You'll find us and subscribe. And we appreciate it. You know what? I keep forgetting about MeWe. I need to go back over there and check that out.
All right. Please do. And maybe we should set up a Topic Us Check page over there as well.
Let's do that.
All right. I will look into that. But in the meantime, it's time to hit the theme and get on out of here. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek, visit our Facebook page, or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek, don't
put on the red shirt.
There we go. Yay!
Paint a tank yellow.
No, don't. It's bad. It's bad. Don't. You don't want to do that.